Okay, well, thank you very much. So again, this will be a tutorial. It'll be extremely simple. What I have to say, if you want to know more, there's a review article written with Hans Hammer that just appeared in Annals of Physics. This is the executive summary of a much more extensive review article that appears in Physics Reports. So if you, this one hopefully includes everything known about few body physics with large scattering length before 2005. And this one focuses on the applications in cold atom physics and especially identical bosons. Okay, so I'm going to begin by reminding you some stuff you already know about the two-body problem, but it might be useful to set up the language. Then I'll describe what the FMOV effect is, and then what it is for identical bosons, and then summarize the more general situations in which it will appear, and then I'll describe in more detail what FMOV physics is and how it may have been, evidence for it may have been seen in recent experiments. So let's start out with the two-body problem. And so I have a problem where I have particles interacting with a short-range interaction, and I can quantify that in terms of the effective range, which I'll denote R sub S. It's the S-wave effective range. And I want to consider systems in which I have a large scattering length. This effective range can be positive or negative. Scattering length can be positive or negative. And what I want is A much greater in magnitude than R. And in fact, I'll be mostly interested in taking the limit when R is extremely small and considering what happens with the scale A. So let me remind you of some of the things you know about this kind of system. First, low energy scattering. That is scattering at energies that are small compared to the energy set by this scale. And here, the cross section has a very simple behavior. It's, at least if I take identical bosons, this is the behavior of the cross section as a function of the energy. So it sigma as a function of E looks kind of like that. It falls beyond some scale A, it falls off like 1 over energy. Okay. Next, shallow bound states. By shallow bound state, I mean ones whose energy is small compared to the energy set by this scale. And there's two cases. If A is negative, there's none. That is, there may be deep bound states, but there's no shallow two-body bound states. Maybe my two-body problem. And if A is positive, there is one. And its energy, I'll often call it the dimer. The energy of the dimer, the binding energy of the dimer is h bar squared over ma squared. It has a wave function with a universal form that depends only on A. It looks like a Yukawa potential. It has a size that's 1/2 A. So if I try to draw a picture of this thing, it's going to look like, there may be some core whose size is set by this range, but then it's going to be a large extended object whose diameter is essentially the scattering length. So when you tune a variable to make the scattering length larger and larger, the core remains fixed, but the size gets larger and larger.
3D, I suppose.
I'll never say anything about. I mean, I'll never say anything today that's not 3D.
Does this generalize to other dimensionalities?
No, it does not. Or at least not straightforwardly, no.
Okay.
So it, yeah. If you generalize it as a function of the of a continuous number of dimensions, there's critical dimensions that are between 2 and 3 where it appears, and between 3 and 4 where it disappears. And so 3 is the only integer dimension where it appears. Okay. Now what happens in the unitary limit where A goes to infinity? So you tune some parameter characterizing the interactions or the mass of the particles to get infinite scattering length. Well, you can see from these formulas, as far as scattering is concerned, the cross-section reduces to something that looks like just 1 over energy. So it has a, looks like that. The binding energy goes to 0. The size goes to infinity. And you'll notice that all 3 of these observables are consistent with scale invariance. That is, in this limit, the system is invariant under changing lengths by some factor lambda, where lambda is any positive real number. Okay, now, of course, that happens only at exactly r is infinity, but it has consequences away from r is infinity. And this I would describe as scaling. It's convenient to, I want to draw a plot of energies versus interaction strengths. And many things are smooth function, as A goes to infinity, many things are smooth functions of 1 over A, smooth functions of 1 over A. And so I would like 1 over A as my interaction variable. And to exhibit the consequences of scale invariance, I would like a energy variable that has the same dimensions. And so it's convenient to take energy to the 1/2, a variable that scales like energy to the 1/2. And then I'll call this an fmov plot, but I'll plot k versus 1 over a. And so I want to display on this plot the possible states of the system. One thing you have is scattering states. Here's the threshold for scattering states. And so these are states where there's 2 atoms scattering. There's a continuum going from 0 up to infinity. There's also, if A is positive, a discrete bound state. And on this plot, this is just the diagonal line. So this is the dimer. And what you'll notice is this has a radial, this figure has a symmetry under radial expansion. If you do a radial expansion of the figure, the threshold maps to the threshold, the dimer maps to the dimer. In fact, if you take any the physics at any point, k and 1 over a, it'll be equivalent to if you want to know what happens here, if you know what happens here, you can determine what happens here just by this scale transformation. So there's scale invariance when you're on this line where A is infinity, and that tells you that the scattering states here are determined by the scattering states there. But there's also scaling behavior, so if you know the scattering here for this value of the scattering length, you know the scattering at this energy for this value of the scattering length. Okay, so the scaling at this critical value, A is infinity, sorry, the scale invariance at A is infinity is related to scaling behavior away from A is infinity.
Strictly speaking, it only works at the resonance.
Scale invariance works at resonance. So at resonance, there's exactly, you have exact scale invariance. Dimers are infinitely large. Cross sections fall off without any scale. But even away from A is infinity, you have scaling behavior. So the scattering at this energy and this scattering at this energy and this scattering length are related to scattering at this energy and that scattering length.
Even though the dimer has finite size.
Yes.
Some large radius and is set by RS, which
the yes, there, so there is a window of universality, which I can draw some. It's a very good point. K squared plus 1 over A squared is comparable to R sub S, beyond which this no longer applies, and you start seeing the effects of the microscopic structure of the problem. Okay? Any final questions on two-body? Okay, so let me tell you what the FMOV effect is. It was discovered by Vitaly Efimov around 1970, and there probably has been there's been no experimental confirmation of this fact until perhaps recently from experiments with cold atoms. But he was discussing the three-body problem, and in fact, let's simplify to three identical bosons. And specifically in the unitary limit, A is plus or minus infinity.
So can I ask one other question about this
yes.
scaling business, which is sort of by analogy with what happens in condensed matter, which is if you're not at unitarity but a little bit away from it, and then when you come as you're about to onto these more sophisticated things involving more than two particles, is it true that when you look in scales less than the scattering length, the appropriate scattering length, everything looks roughly in the unitarity limit. So in condensed matter, that would be like saying if you aren't quite at the critical point, as long as you're looking at phenomena less than the correlation length,
yes.
then
so
everything looks critical. So your many-body, well, your three-body wave function mm-hmm. would look critical on at least the short length scales, even mm-hmm. not quite at the unitarity point.
Yes, very good. Okay.
Eric, this just coming back to this mm-hmm. scaling behavior. I guess this scaling actually is an approximation, right? I mean, the deviation from the scaling is basically measured by the range of interaction over the scattering lengths.
The deviations from scaling fall off as a power law.
Of the scattering lengths.
Namely, as okay. they fall off as a range divided by A.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, yeah, the first corrections fall off as one power
right.
of
right.
range divided by A.
Strictly speaking.
Well, even if you're out of the exact of the resonance, there's also a fraction of k times RS. Mm-hmm. A is infinity, but as if you look at both of them.
K equals 0, and A is infinity.
Yeah,
so.
But that's a single point. So you don't mm-hmm. have scaling at that point.
Yeah. I mean, that's the
right. At non-zero energy,
yeah.
Energy provides a scale, but there's no interactions that provide any scale for the problem. So observables have to have scaling behavior as a function of the energy. Okay, so what happens to three identical bosons in this limit? So this is the limit when you're sitting right at A is infinity along this line. So there's a dimer is exactly at the threshold with infinite size. Well, what Efimov realized is that there in this limit there are, there in fact must be infinitely many three body bound states. They have sizes that differ by factors of 22.7. They have binding energies that differ by factors of 515.
Compared to
the next one. There's a sequence of three-body bound states. This next one is small, it has a smaller binding energy by a factor of 500. And a smaller size, and a larger size by a factor of 23 in the previous one. And we have accumulation point at the three-body threshold. Three-body threshold. Okay, so first of all, what do energies look like? Okay, so first, there's the two-body spectrum over there looks like this. It's energy. There's a bound state exactly at threshold. The three-body spectrum looks like this. There's some deepest state. Then there's a next shallower one, and a next shallower one, and they have an accumulation point at zero energy. Now I've drawn this so that the scaling factor is 2, so I've drawn this one a factor of 2 shallower, this one a factor of 2 shallower, and in the real world it's 22.7. But if I try to do 20.7, you can see I wouldn't have the resolution. So in all my plots, I will draw things as if the discrete scaling factor is 2, and you have to use your imagination to translate that into a factor of 22.7.
22.7 or
515. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So the energies form a geometric sequence that converges to 0.
Is 515 the square of 22.7?
It is, yes. It is, okay. In fact, if you're curious where that number comes from, if you solve this transcendental equation, and you'll find it has a solution. F0 is 1.00624, and the discrete scaling factor is exponential of pi divided by F0, and this is a thing that's 22.7, and its square is 515. Okay, what is the structure of these objects? Well, there will be some deepest Efimov state. What it will look like is there will be some core whose size is set by the effective range, and then it'll have a size larger than that. The next Efimov state will have a core that looks like this Efimov state, and it'll be larger by a factor of 22.7. The next one yet will have some kind of very small core. And it'll be larger yet. and it'll go on and on, and eventually the largest one will be infinitely large. And the structure looks very much like a souvenir you can buy in Russia. They make these nesting dolls, where if you open up one doll, you find inside there's one that's smaller, and if you open up that, you find one inside that's smaller. The difference is that those nesting dolls have a discrete, they typically have a discrete scaling factor of 1.3. In this case, the discrete scaling factor is 22.7.
What is the size? I mean, what is the coordinate here? How should I think of, there are three body space.
What is the size of the first one?
No, I mean, you know, this picture, I mean, this size, what is it if I take 3 points? So should I think about like distance between two atoms or?
What is the variable I'm drawing?
Yes.
Well, if you like,
spacing from the center of mass or something.
Let's just say that these are contours where the probability density of a particle vanishes, and the probability densities are spherically symmetric, and so as you go out from the center, it'll reach some kind of peak around here, and then go to zero, and then reach another peak around here, go to zero, reach another peak around here, and eventually fall off exponentially.
As a function of what?
Of distance from the center of this object.
Any of three particles from the center?
Well, there are three particles. Yeah. There's a three-body bound state. If you ask for the probability density of finding a particle in this object, this is a showing you the contours of probability density.
Basically one particle wave function.
Well, it's the, if you like, it's the...
Integrate over two of them, presumably, and then you get left with...
Yeah, so it's... So if you look for a particle in that three-body bound state, its probability density will have that structure. If you want to know more... What's that?
The central point is the center of mass, and then you integrate out one variable, and that's the density of the function.
Well, I would rather, if you like, it's the probability for one summing over all possibilities of where the third, second, and third guy are. So it's the number density as a function of position.
But did I understand you correctly when you said it's a symmetry? As you go between these different shells, there'll be minima and maxima of the probability density. It's not monotonic.
No,
maybe
it's
one with which are hierarchical. You go up and down as you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you might ask, why would you get such a structure? And a simple way to understand it is, it's possible to formulate the three body problem in terms of variables that where you can reduce the problem to a single variable problem, and these variables are called hyperspherical coordinates. One of them is the hyperradius, which is the root mean square separation of the three particles. So if I have here's my three particles, 1, 2, 3. Now you have separations R1, 2, R1, 3, and R2, 3. And if you take the root mean square separation, that gives you the hyperradius. It's small only if all the particles are close together. It's large only if at least one of them is far from one of the others. Okay. In this, if you organize the problem in terms of hyperspherical coordinates, you can reduce the problem to a problem in terms of the hyperradius alone. And in that formulation, you'll get an effective potential. And that effective potential looks like it has, looks like a 1 over r squared potential if you're in regions of the hyperradius that are large compared to the effective range and small compared to the scattering length. So in that region, the potential, effective potential looks like this. It, let's see. Oops. It looks like that. Of course, at short distance, it's cut off by some effects involving the effective range. At large distances, it will be affected by the scattering length enters as a scale. But in between, it has this scale invariant form, and the coefficient is related to the discrete scaling factor, which I just erased. But anyway, this coefficient is related to this 22.7. Okay, and
so is this potential the same as the potential between dimer and adjacent?
No.
The dimer size
is
long.
Well, dimer is A, right? If you have positive scattering length where there is a dimer, and if you go
stay a little bit away from resonance, but still in the scattering region, where the correction is small.
If you, this is a 1 over r squared potential that's asymptoting to zero. If you're at positive energies, it won't quite get to zero. It'll asymptote to the binding energy of that dimer. And way out here, the configuration in this variable will be a dimer and an atom that are separated by the hyperradius.
A is just the size of the dimer, right? The scattering
length. A is the size of the dimer, yes. Okay, so in this potential there can be bound states. So for example, there can be a bound state here, and it'll have a wave function that looks like that, and it's the inner core is determined by physics at short distances, but then it'll oscillate until it till it falls off exponentially when it gets through the potential. At shorter distances, what you'll see is you'll also see a wave function that'll look exactly like the one above it, except it's missing the last half cycle. If you get to longer distances, you'll be missing you'll have one more half cycle. And so each time you go through one of these cycles, you're getting building another layer on this nesting doll.
And the lowest state has one node?
The lowest state has one node in the scale invariant region, and it could have many nodes inside the short distance region. So for example, if you look at the cesium atom that has all these, that, in which there's evidence for FMOV physics, this wave function actually has, I don't know, 70 or so nodes. I mean, lots of nodes in the short distance region, but it'll be, it's in the long distance region that you'll have this this behavior that repeats itself.
If you have three particles that don't have the same mass, can you still reduce this to a one body problem this way?
Yes, what I'll turn to next is telling you how, to what extent this generalizes. But are any more questions about what the FMOV effect itself is? So it's the fact that there are, in the limit where A is infinity, there are infinitely many three-body bound states that are related by a discrete, this structure is, consistent with a discrete scaling symmetry, where I change lengths not by an arbitrary real number, but an integer power of this discrete scaling factor. And so the Efimov effect is the fact that in this unitary limit, there are infinitely many three-body bound states that are related by a discrete scaling symmetry.
You mean that takes you from one bound state to another bound state?
Yes. So if you shrink the core to infinity, then you'd have, on all scales, you'd have this behavior of you'd have exact scaling variance. Just like in the two-body problem, if you shrink the effective range, or if you decrease the effective range to, sorry, if you decrease the effective range to zero, then you have exact scaling variance at A is infinity. Here, if you decrease the effective range to zero, this behavior would extend infinitely far in both directions. You'd have, it's consistent with a discrete scaling symmetry.
Can I ask one question just about this effective potential? For 1 over R squared potentials, there's some critical coefficient normally which where the spectrum alters.
Yes.
And in your case, is it one side or the other of the critical case, or is it exactly the critical?
With identical bosons, it's on one side.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the general, as a function of masses and whatever, I'll tell you the general behavior when you're on which side of the critical point.
Slightly different question is that if one consider the atom dimer scattering in the vicinity of this resonance, is this part of interaction important for those scattering processes?
When you're at this point, that dimer is infinitely large. And yeah, so this is when you have, yeah, so let me put off for a few minutes what happens in the scaling regime. But I will come back to that in some detail. Anything else? Okay, so this is a rather marvelous feature. How does it, is it special for this problem, or does it generalize? And so first let me ask about the case where I have three identical masses. So it could be three identical bosons, it could be three different hyperfine states of the same atom, or even maybe states of different isotopes of the same atom which have almost the same mass. And so the question is, does the Efimov effect occur in that case? And it depends on when you have these three particles, they all have their interactions. If they're identical bosons, they have to have the same interactions, but more generally they can interact with different scattering lengths. And the question depends on how many, this is a question of what happens in the limit when the scattering length goes to infinity. In this case, you have to ask which scattering lengths. So,
are you talking about identical masses, but particles are not identical? Why do they have different scattering lengths?
If they are three distinguishable particles, they can have three different scattering lengths.
Okay.
If they're identical bosons, they all have to be the same, and so if you let one go to infinity, they all go to infinity.
Okay.
But let's suppose that we're adjusting the problem so that all go to infinity. And in this case, the answer is yes, there is an Efimov effect. And the discrete scaling factor is always 22.7. So they can be three identical bosons, they can be two identical bosons and a third particle, they can be three distinguishable particles. They cannot be two identical fermions and a third particle because they cannot have any scattering length, let alone a large scattering length. So
this is an estimate.
Yes. Okay, so the next case, suppose I have two large scattering lengths. And then it depends on what the particles are. If I have two identical bosons plus a third particle of the same mass, or if I have three distinguishable particles, in these cases, I get a discrete scaling factor. This time, its value is 1986. And so each one is 2,000 times larger than the previous one, which means it's going to be awfully hard to see in the laboratory because it doesn't take too many factors, too many powers of 2,000 until you're larger than the size of the universe, much let alone it's larger than let alone the laboratory. Okay. If you have two identical fermions, plus a third particle, then the answer is no. There is no Efimov effect. Okay, so next let me relax the problem and ask, what if I have unequal masses?
So this statement about fermions, if I include a Q wave,
this feature that you have the sizes of the states getting larger and larger is something special to S-wave interactions. And so, when you there may be universal things to find when there are P-wave, then when there are resonant P-wave interactions, but they don't have the same character of creating bound states that are larger and larger as you let the parameter go closer to the resonance. Okay, so suppose we have two equal masses and the third may not be equal. Okay, well, instead of telling you everything, let me tell you the interesting cases. And one is two identical bosons in this case the well again it depends on how many large scattering lengths. And it depends upon the mass ratio. So if I take my the mass ratio of my unequal guys, this can range from 0 to 1 all the way to infinity. And when this happens, this discrete scaling factor will range from 1 up to, it'll increase to 13.6, and then it'll decrease to, 22.7, of course, and then decrease to 15.7. If I have two large scattering lengths, so here's my particles 1, 2, and 3, if there's two large scattering lengths, they have to be the scattering of the identical bosons with the third particle, because those have to be equal. In this case, again, this mass ratio range from 0 to 1 to infinity. The discrete scaling factor ranges from 1 to increases to 1986. And then increases even more to infinity. Okay, and finally, two identical fermions. Again, the two identical fermions, they'll have to have the same scattering length with a third particle, no scattering length between them. In this case, there's no FMOV effect if the mass ratio, if the fermions are heavy enough. There is one if the mass ratio is small enough, less than 13.6. And as a function of M3 over M1, 0 to 0.0735. Okay, so this ratio can go from 0 to the 1 over that. And in this case, the discrete scaling factor changes from 1 and increases to infinity at that point. And then beyond that point, there's no FMOV effect. Okay. Yes, thank you. Okay. So that gives you some idea how it generalizes. And it's probably as much of that as you care to know. It's also affected by symmetries between the particles, and so the general story gets quite complicated. Equal mass is no.
So lambda 0 equals 1 is a continuous case where you have continuous scale.
Yes. Yeah. So if you're trying to observe the FMOV effect, you would like to be able to see repeating behavior. So you'd like to have small lambda zero, so you can have an experiment that sees several recurrences of this phenomenon. So 22.7 is not good. 1986 is terrible, and what would be very good is something closer to one. And I'll come back to that at the end. Okay, any more questions about how it generalizes away from the three identical bosons? Because I'll return now to three identical bosons. So this was what happens at this unitary limit when A is infinity. Now I want to consider the more general problem where you have finite A. A scattering length large compared to the range, but not necessarily infinite. And what I want to draw is the FMOV plot that shows an energy variable versus interaction variable. And once again, my energy variable is designed to have the same dimensions as 1 over A. So it's basically the square root of the energy. Okay. Okay, so K versus 1 over A. This is a three-body problem. So first let me draw the threshold for the continuum states, the scattering states. So here's the threshold at A. For positive energies, you have states consisting of three atoms scattering. You also have them in this case for positive A, but you also have atom dimer scattering states, and they're above this line. So those are all the continuum states, and then you have discrete states. States that are below this line will be discrete states. They'll be three-body bound states, or trimers. Okay. We know, if you're on this line, we know what the spectrum looks like. There's a if I... Okay, so there's a infinitely many of these with an accumulation point at zero. But if you're away from A's infinity, they almost all have to disappear. And so the question is, how do they disappear? Okay, so let's look at this guy. Well, turns out that what this guy will do is disappear through the three-atom threshold if I make A negative. If I make A positive, it'll disappear through the atom-dimer threshold. And, but there, once you know what one of these FMOV trajectories does, you can use scaling to determine what all the others do. There's invariance under if I scale the energy and the interaction variable by the same power of 22.7, they'll be equivalent under up to scaling. And so once I know what one of these does, I know what the other ones do. This one goes like that, this one goes like that, and this one like that. Okay.
Is the lowest one special?
The lowest one can be special in the sense that there is a window of universality with radius set by the range out which side universality fails. And it's possible for this lowest one to get out of the, if you're within the window, these guys must disappear on the atom-dimer threshold. If you get out of the window, it no longer has to follow the scaling behavior. So one case, I would have preferred to draw this so my circle. So, yes, so let me leave that in the...
The second one is always...
Yeah. So one case in point is the helium atom. In the helium atom, helium atom has a it has a large scattering length, about 100 Bohr radii. It has a very large diatomic molecule. It has two triatomic molecules. They, some people take as the criterion for an FMOV state that it has to disappear through this atom-dimer threshold. The problem is that you have to increase the scattering length the problem is that it can, well, in the case of the helium dimer, you're sitting you're sitting something like here, where you have two FMOV states. At least everyone acknowledges this is an FMOV state. Some don't acknowledge this one is one because it never disappears through the atom-dimer threshold if you change the strength of interaction. But the problem is that it escapes from the window of universality before it has a chance. And so if in the helium potential you change the potential to be weaker, you'll find that it tracks this line perfectly well. And
how did they do that, change the potential?
By changing the line of code in the computer program. Yeah. No. Okay. Another important point is that some people there's a misconception that FMOV state should always differ in binding energies by factors of 22.7. And that's true for A's infinity. these differ, sorry, 515, these all differ by 515, but if you go away from A is infinity, that's not what happens. For example, at this point, this guy is 6.7 times deeper than that one, not 515 times deeper. But what the discrete scaling symmetry tells you is not that they're related by 515, but that if you have an atom dimer at threshold, if you have FMOS state at the atom dimer threshold, there's another one at a scattering length 22.7 times smaller, and another one here, and another one there, and so on. Similarly, it says on this line, if you have a FMOS state at the three-atom threshold, there's another one here, there's another one here, and another one there. And so the essential feature is the discrete scaling, it's discrete scaling behavior.
So if we call the bottom stairs the first generation state, two questions. At the resonance, how this binding energy and details of...
How does... Okay, when you're at A is infinity, the fact that you have a discrete spectrum says that there is a scale in the problem. That scale is set by short distance physics. It's determined by the physics at the scale of the effective range. And so it's it'll tell you the energy of one of these, and the rest are related by discrete scaling.
But there.
Well, the lowest one will have a binding energy that's somewhere between the scale of the effective range and 515 times larger, but could be anywhere in that range.
Okay. And presumably, the point where this first generation starts on this one over A axis, that point also depends on the range of interaction.
Well, if you know this one, if you know this point, you know that point. Everything, once you pick one three-body observable, everything else is determined.
Okay.
And
that's why your circle always intersects with the first generation, because it's the same scale.
Well, it could.
I mean approximately, they are of the same scale. See, I guess if you look at first generation, the intersecting point of first generation and the scattering lens, right? That probably is also one over RS.
Say that again?
So if I move around the scattering lens, I look at the point where the first generation appears, that's somewhere there.
It'll be within a factor of 22.7 of 1 over RS. So it could be right at 1 over RS, it could not. Could it be delayed till 22.7 times larger? Somewhere in that interval,
yeah, so it's
it should.
To the window.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. One question Faye asked earlier was, what does this guy look like? And the answer, well, these guys, you know what they look like. They look like these nested Russian dolls. This guy, when you have a trimer that goes to the atom dimer threshold, that tells you that the atom dimer scattering length must diverge, and therefore there's another scale in the problem. And so this guy will look like a dimer with size 1 over A and a third atom. And with the whole scale of the bound state being given by this atom dimer threshold. So it looks like a atom plus dimer bound state. It's just a two-body problem all over again, where one of the two-body problems is, one of the two bodies is a dimer.
Is the potential between atom and dimer at the scale of the N is also universal?
The size of this atom dimer scattering length is set by any of these other three-body observables. So as you...
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe the easiest thing to say is that the energy of this trimer is h bar squared over m a dimer squared with, I don't know, there's three halves or something from the fact that it's there's a mass m and a mass 2. Constituents have mass m and 2m, and so that brings in factors of 3 and 2 and such.
But all the potentials are very short-range.
So right, so this...
It remains to be a short-range potential.
Yes, yes. All on the scale R sub s. Okay, so that then inside this thing, that there's a core that looks like a more standard FMOV state with nested Russian dials. Here, interesting thing is that these states disappear at the threshold, just like this atom, the dimer. When this dimer, in the two-body problem, when this dimer goes to the threshold, it doesn't continue as a resonance, it disappears. Mathematically, the pole jumps to the second sheet in some complex plane. And that happens here too. The FMOV state disappears in the sense that a pole jumps to a non-physical sheet. Here, these guys survive as resonances as you go above the threshold. And the reason is that this effective potential, which looks like 1 over r in the shorter distance region, it asymptotically approaches 0, but it does that by rising above and then approaching 0. And that leaves you the possibility of trapping a resonance in the inside here that can't be stable because it can tunnel through and disappear, but it will survive as a resonance as you go above the threshold.
The positive part is not in the resonance.
I'm sorry?
The positive part of the potential is in universal.
This potential is all universal. It's driven by the scattering length only. Here it's scale invariant. It's 1 over r squared. But the long distance behavior is completely determined by the scattering length and cares nothing about the range, which happens all here at short distances.
So on this plot, the two-body scattering length is where?
I'm sorry?
If I want to look at the two-body scattering length on this map, where should I look at?
It's somewhere around here within within a factor of 10. It's within there. But as you can see, there's big factors that float around here. There's factors of 10 and 5 or 15. And
so 1 over r squared is at the scale smaller than.
Yes, 1 over r squared is in this region. Okay.
So can I ask about the consequence of this picture on the right of the dimer and the singular atom near the threshold where there's this big extra scale? Could you turn that, if you then thought about two dimers and one extra atom, is that like one of your unequal mass examples from before to get a super FMOV effect?
Yeah, so in this region, it's a two-body problem all over again. Yeah. In fact, it's the same as that. So there will be FMOV effect that creates 4 and 5-body bound states. It'll create 4-body bound states at nearby energies. But those 4-body bound states, of course, are unstable, have a small width to decaying into lower FMOV states, so they won't be sharp states like they are in this simple case. They'll be, they have a finite width.
So at a distance much larger than the 2-body scattering length, is the potential a power law or a power law?
It.
The positive tail.
I forget, but the answer is in that review article. And I should have mentioned, if someone wants, I have a few copies of that with me. If somebody wants the long review article, I can give you. If you want the short one, I don't have it. But it's universal. I don't remember. I suspect it falls off like, I don't remember, but the answer is in that review article. I knew it. I knew the answer once. Okay, so what are the dramatic features? Well, okay, there are several dramatic features that you can glean from this. One is that if you are near one of these points where there's a 3-atom bound state, where there's a trimer near the threshold, you can get resonant enhancement of three body processes. You can get resonant enhancement of 3 atoms scattering to 3 atoms. You can also get resonant enhancement of You can also get resonant enhancement of a three-body recombination process where three atoms collide to form an atom and a deep dimer. And that'll happen nearby each of these points. For positive A, you can have resonant enhancement of atom dimer elastic scattering, or atom, or a process called dimer relaxation, where your collision allows a dimer to relax into a deeply bound dimer. And there's one more dramatic feature that you'll have to take on faith, and that is there are points on this axis related by factors of 22.7 where there are interference zeros in three-body recombination into the shallow dimer. So the rate for that process turns out to vanish at a discrete set of points differing by factors of 22.7. Okay, well, let me turn finally to experiment. And the relevant experiments have been done by the Innsbruck group. And if you'll be at the conference next week, you'll learn a lot more about it. But let me just give you a brief preview of what you'll learn. What they are doing these experiments is trapping cesium-133 atoms in the 3 plus 3 hyperfine state. They cool them to temperatures as low as 10 nanokelvin. But they avoid getting a BEC because it causes loss problems. And also they control scattering length with a Feshbach resonance.
This must be very low density.
Well, it's as high as you can get. They make it as high as they can get without getting a BEC. So it's, yes, it's low density. It's almost high enough for a BEC. Yes. But it's cesium, which is kind of heavy compared to other particles, so that's a little different. Okay, one thing you need to know about cesium is that it has a naturally large scattering length. That is, the shape of the cesium potential is just right to have a bound state very close to the threshold. And so it has, there's a Feshbach resonance, and so I'm going to use the magnetic field to adjust the scattering length. And the scattering length is pretty big, somewhere around 2400 Bohr. But on top of that, there's a Feshbach resonance very near zero field. And so it looks kind of like that. And let me just add one detail here that I skipped, but it'll be useful to mention that in a second. In this case, the event rate at threshold is given by, well, the event rate for a three-body process like this will have dimensions that are length to the fourth. And if the scattering length is the only important variable, if scattering length is the only important length, it must go like a to the fourth. But then there's a coefficient that, in this case, you don't have scale invariance. You don't have a to the fourth. It's modulated by a logarithmic behavior, and so c is a function of a. As a function of log a, it oscillates between 0 and 67.1 with periods of 22.7. Okay. So anyway, they're playing. They're adjusting the magnetic field to tune their scattering length. I didn't draw this very well, but they're able to get down to minus 2400, and they have to stay at positive magnetic field. Well, because this is the magnitude of the magnetic field. If they just change the polarity, if they turn the magnetic field negative, what'll happen? Well, this is the lowest hyperfine state for positive magnetic field, and that prevents processes where two atoms collide and jump into another spin state and fly away with high energy. If they go beyond this point, it'll be the 3 minus 3 that's the lowest spin state, and their atoms will disappear through a two-body relaxation process. So keeping this the lowest hyperfine state requires them to be at positive magnetic field. They're stuck varying between minus 2400 and plus 2400, roughly. And what they found is resonant for negative A, they found resonant enhancement of the three-body recombination process into a deep dimer at a scattering length of somewhere like minus 800 Bohr radii. They've seen atom dimer, so that's somewhere at a negative scattering length here. They've seen resonant enhancement of this dimer relaxation process at A near plus 400 Bohr radii. And they've seen a deep minimum in the three-body recombination, which I just erased. So here A greater than 0, atom at plus atom plus atom, atom plus dimer. A is around 200 Bohr radii. Okay, so if you see one of these features they believe they understand two-body physics very well, so they believe that two-body physics cannot explain any of these features, and they believe it's three-body physics. To really clinch the Efimov effect, you should, one thing you do is try to increase things by 22.7 and see if you see it again. Now, the problem, for example, is that this three-body recombination process is a loss process. When you three atoms collide to form an atom plus dimer, the dimer is enough energy, the binding energy released from the dimer is enough to cause the atom and dimer to fly out of the trap. And so this is a loss process. If you're going to find the next feature of this interference zero, you have to first increase A by 22.7, which means your loss rates increase by 22.7 to the fourth power. But then that's 10 to the 5 or so. And of course, that's modulated by this logarithmic behavior with zeros. But anyway, you lose your experiment anyway. So anyway, all these loss processes scale with the scattering length. And so if you try to increase the scattering length to find the next one, you're losing atoms. There's also a technical reason, and that is they're using cesium in this region. They can't go below minus 2400 because then the 3 minus 3 state becomes the stable one. They can't go above 2400. because that's where you get to the background scattering length. So they're sort of stuck in this region. They can't get to the next FMOV state. Out here somewhere, there's another Feshbach resonance, where they're trying to increase their magnetic field enough so they can use this, and then they'll be able to have much more range in adjusting the scattering length to get large positive and not large negative values. So that's one possibility, is to go for them to go to the higher FMOV state. The other thing I want to point out is that remember that the discrete scaling factor depends upon the masses and symmetries of the particles, and the advantageous thing is to have two heavies and one light. That can give you small discrete scaling factors. One that looks quite favorable is to take cesium plus lithium. In this case, this is two heavy bosons and one light fermion. But in this case, the discrete scaling factor is only 4.8. And so that's a system that looks very promising for seeing FMOV physics and seeing more than one occurrence of this log periodic behavior.
Okay, how many zeros were seen in the experiment?
I'm sorry?
How many zeros?
One.
Just one, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
the peak.
That one is here. The next one is predicted to be up here somewhere, but they can only get this high. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for your interest.
Know what they are, if what they observe is
a theme of
physics, because they
didn't
see
well,
the next state.
What they see is as a function of scattering length, this is the recombination rate. What they see is a resonance shape. What we were able to predict, I mean, my contribution to this was predicting the shape of as a function of the scattering length of what they should see. It has two adjustable parameters. One is you need one three-body input to tell you where the FMOV states are. So that's one parameter. You can adjust that, of course, to get the peak in the right position. There's another parameter that tells you where's the potential? I've lost. In this effective potential, waves will be flowing down this 1 over r potential. And if there's no decay channels for an FMOV state, they'll simply be reflected back with the same amplitude. If there are decay channels, so if FMOV can decay into an atom plus a dimer, a deep dimer, then this amplitude will come back with some suppression factor. That is, there will be an absorption of waves that go down this 1 over r potential. And that brings in a factor eta. That will adjust the width of this peak. And the shape that we derived gives you if you adjust the position and the width, you get the height correct. So it's a non-trivial prediction of the universal limit. So that's at least some evidence that what they see is FMOV physics. Also, I should mention that in these experiments, the loss rate is changing by 5 orders of magnitude, and so this resonance shape is fitting over a region of 5 orders of magnitude in the loss rate. And so that is also, I mean, it's in favor of the interpretation in terms of FMOV states. There's a great dynamical range in the experiment, and this universal formula is fitting well over that great range.
What's the estimate of binding energy for the first generation for this isotope? Is it higher or lower than 10 nanokelvin of the
top? You're asking about?
The lowest energy box there.
Well, I'd say the estimate is zero if it's hit at the threshold. That's a good question. If I look in the review article, I would be able to tell you. I don't have it off the top of my head.
I mean, I guess I worry about even if it's finite temperature, say, 10 nanokelvin, right? And are these trimers robust at the 10 nanokelvin? If it's not robust, do you still have this?
Well, it's the proof it's robust is that they see dramatic resonance in the loss rate. We had no idea in advance what this parameter was. It could have been 1,000, in which case there's zero probability of being reflected and you'd see no FMOV structure. It turns out to be something like 0.1. So it is robust enough that in cesium, in spite of the fact that it has hundreds of two-body bound states that it can decay into, that FMOV trimer is robust enough to leave a very dramatic resonance.
So if you take the parameters you expect for that, and then you imagine somehow you've created these trimers and moved to resonance, or how long would they live for before they decay into these deep bound states?
The lifetime, these energies scale, the lifetimes also scale, so if this gets a width, this gets a larger width, and this a narrower width, and so on. So you have to ask which one.
There's one that they see.
This one.
Yeah.
They don't produce it. They're using the fact that it's near the threshold to get a resonant enhancement. So then they're...
I guess I'm just asking if one imagined trying to produce it somehow, just how long would it live for? Is there a possibility to have like thermal gas in these objects, or are they going to decay very quickly compared to other timescales?
Well, I'd say the fact that you can see them as sharp resonance and lost features is encouraging. In the review, there's formulas that will allow you to estimate precisely what the width should be.
Because in principle, they can do the trimer spectroscopy, and then just like a molecular spectroscopy.
If they can do dimer spectroscopy, then they should be able to do trimer spectroscopy. But there is big factors here, so you can, a factor of 500 in a binding energy can put you out of the range of their technology. So it's not obvious. I mean, it's certainly something that can be applied to the problem. But you go to another Feshbach resonance, go to cesium plus lithium. So,
would actually spectroscopy be difficult to do because of the hierarchical structure of the wave functions? So, if you look at two of these things and ask about their overlap, and you're trying to excite, the atoms from one to the other,
I'd say
the wave functions in the limit where they're both finite look essentially identical, although the weight will be smaller for the bigger one.
I'd say a worse.
And whether you get any non-zero matrix elements in such a product.
That's a potential problem. I'd say a worse problem is that to my very limited understanding, the way they play these games is excite the dimer up to some higher level, and then use its decays. They play games like that, and it helps very much that they know what all these higher levels are, because they know the two-body problem very well. The problem is they don't know the three-body problem well, so they don't know what they can pump the states up into, and so the lack of that knowledge is a severe handicap in trying to do spectroscopy in the same way they do it for dimers.
Yeah, because matter state or not state.
Okay,
no more questions.